You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
All right, hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Media Day with the Seattle Storm, where we are joined by a guest who has won more gold medals than all our other guests put together. Thanks for joining. Olympic gold medals.
Okay. Yeah, if you don't count our childhood family.
Not getting the Carcino family Olympics. Okay. Sue Bird of the Seattle Storm, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I also realized when I was thinking about this, I have interviewed you more than any other player in my life. And now that's true of you, too.
Yes.
Starting off, you know, we're working towards the season. How do you kind of build off the success you guys had last year after the Olympic break?
I think it's great that we were able to experience, you know, what winning feels like and what making the playoffs feels like, but we can't get too excited about that. We can't live off of that. So it's a good combination of knowing what it takes, feeling it, but also knowing that we need to do a lot better and we need to build on it if we want to make any kind of noise in the playoffs. So the combination of that should be a good starting point for us this season.
What do you see as the impact of some of your key additions, Alexis Peterson in the second round of the draft to fill the position that, you know, like the Sonics had center, the Mariners had left field. For the Storm, it's kind of been your backup point guard.
Yeah.
That's historically been the tough spot to fill. How does she fit into that role?
Yeah, well, I know, you know, all of us, myself included, when I was watching the draft, as the numbers started to go, you know, from 1 to 2 and so on, and all of a sudden, you know, it was like pick 13, 14. It was like, oh my God, Alexis Peterson still hasn't been taken. And I'm pretty sure had we stayed at 6, we would have taken her. So to get her at 15 was very exciting, I think, for everyone, including myself. Because like you said, we really haven't had a backup point guard, not somebody that we, as a franchise, and myself, you know, as the mainstay point guard, has been able to invest in. So it's nice to get this young point guard who has already in training camp shown a lot of potential. She's a quick learner. You know, she can score, which nowadays is really a necessary thing or a necessary part of playing that position. It's just great for us to have a player like that. And like I said, for me to be able to help her. I haven't really, you know, I haven't been in practice much just because of my knee. So we haven't kind of gotten that rolling yet, but I'm sure it will. And then we added Carolyn Swords as well, which is something we were really missing. You know, we like to play this fast, up-tempo style, which is definitely... that's us. That's our identity. But we needed a big player. We did. We were getting killed in a lot of ways. And it's not fair to ask Stewie, Lang, you know, Tak to be down there banging with Sylvia Fowles and Tina Charles. So Carolyn Sword has been a huge addition as well. And she's shown that she can actually keep up with that pace. So it's hopefully going to be good for us.
Besides everything else I've seen in practice, she sets a monster screen. Are you looking forward to coming off of this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you're a good screener, in my mind, you're extremely valuable. So.
Well, to go back to the topic of scoring point guards in the draft, obviously at the top of the draft, a point guard with whom our listener is familiar and you're familiar, Kelsey Plum from UW, going number one overall to San Antonio. What did you see watching her play, you know, the last few years?
Well, obviously you saw somebody who improved. You know, I think her game was always kind of, it always had this identity to it. You knew she was a scorer. You knew she could hit threes and you know, attack the glass and get fouled and go to the free throw line. But the improvement was in the consistency of that. You know, her shooting percentages skyrocketed this year, just playing a very consistent and in some ways a very mature game. It was as if she knew what she could do, and that's what she did. And she didn't try to do anything crazy. I mean, she's obviously capable of doing a lot, so it's not like, you know, she was putting herself in a box or anything, but she just kind of went out there and played her game. And it was fun to watch, and it was fun to watch her grow. And you could see that this was a player that wanted to succeed at the next level. It wasn't just about college for her as she was going through that senior year. She wanted to prove that she could be a professional, and here she is.
Yeah, it felt like some of the conversation, we've talked a lot about Kelsey Plum on this podcast, it felt like some of the conversation going into the season wasn't that she was the unanimous number one pick in the draft, and then throughout this year kind of demonstrated herself that she was clearly the top talent.
Like I said, her senior year was incredible. Yeah. You know, some of the numbers that she put up. I remember early, I'm really good friends, obviously, with Morgan Valley, who was the assistant at UW and did coach Kelsey for 2 years. And early in the season, I remember Morgan just kind of, we were like talking, who knows about what. And she kind of said something like, oh, yeah, Kelsey needs to average, and it was some crazy number, like 26 a game for the season in order to break the record. And I don't know what she averaged the year before. You guys do. I mean, it's like probably like 21 or something. anyways, she averaged low 20s or something like that. And it was kind of like, oh, like hopefully she can get it done. That would be great. And then it was like, oh, if we go, you know, if we play two games in the Pac-12 tournament and then we get to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA, she'll have an even better chance. And all of a sudden, before you knew it, I mean, the kid's averaging 30.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just this insane year.
And got it done during the regular season.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very exciting. We were both at that one. Does it change now? Like the idea of playing against her, you've been watching her all this time. Now, you know.
Yeah, you know, for me, now that I'm, I think, the oldest in the league.
You're the oldest in the league?
I believe so.
Wow. Oh, man.
You're not. Don't quote me on that. There might be some elders out there. I'm pretty sure.
That can't be.
I'm surprised you volunteered that information.
Yeah. I think I'm proud of it. Right. I'm working on being proud of it. No, I don't think there's anyone left from my draft class.
Really?
And Tamika Catchings retired last year. Felicia Milton. Anyways, Swin. So anyways, now that I'm the, you know, now that I've been the old, one of the older players for quite some time now, I'm used to playing against these young kids who watched me growing up or watched, you know, my generation growing up. So it's kind of same old for me. But I'm sure for the younger kids when they come in the league and they get to play against the Diana Taurasis, you know, and the people they've been watching, it's crazy for them. For me, I try to just keep it, you know, same old, same old.
Well, you mentioned Diana Taurasi, and you were at the UConn game where they lost in the Final Four, ending their 111-game win streak.
Yeah.
So aside from in our tournament challenge pool, that loss cost my 4-year-old son. And he could have beaten out a bunch of like middle-aged dudes. So it was pretty devastating for us personally. But I'm curious for you being there what that was like.
You know, it just felt like one of those days. And I've been on teams where I was the UConn, quote unquote, of the team. And I've been on teams where I was the, you know, quote unquote, Mississippi State. And it just felt like one of those days where this was meant to happen. It was like no matter what, it was the stars were aligned. Everything that needed to happen for Mississippi State did. Everything that could have gone wrong for UConn did. And sometimes basketball is like that. Sometimes sports are like that. Yeah. And even though I'm a UConn alum and I was, you know, sad for the kids and, you know, kind of bummed that, you know, the team didn't go on to win 5 in a row, that the team didn't continue the streak. You know, at some point that streak was going to end. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, it probably, who knows, maybe helped women's basketball, give it a different flavor, give it some excitement. And I don't know, like I said, watching the game, it's like I was sad for the kids, but in some ways it's like you gotta tip your hat to Mississippi State. They played perfectly. And I mean, it took a game winning shot to do it.
Yeah. It was awesome how that became a thing on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did your phone blow up when they showed you during the game?
Yeah. Well, I knew once they put me on camera, because usually my phone starts going off and I'm like, oh, great. They put me on camera. So, I think for women's basketball, it was not the worst thing. For a UConn alum, not the best thing, but so be it.
Felt to me, and you refuted this to me earlier,
because I just watched the end of the UConn March to Madness documentary on HBO, which was really outstanding.
Yeah, it was really good.
It felt to me like Gino was a little bit relieved that it happened.
No, I don't think it was relief. I think, what do you say when you've just won 111?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, who are you to complain about a loss? That's the vibe I got, you know, and he had awareness around that.
Yeah.
You know, he saw the bigger picture in terms of what was happening. And don't get me wrong, would he have preferred to, you know, they almost lost a game to Tulane in the regular season. Would he have preferred, or they had the toughest schedule this year and all this stuff. Would he have preferred to have lost earlier to then win in March? Absolutely. But I mean, what do you say, especially with the way the game happened? It's like, what do you say, you know? And again, how do you complain when you just won? You don't remember even what it's like to lose.
Yeah, you're like the team that's on the wrong side of the historic movie that they make about the unlikely game.
Right.
That's a weird place to be. But I liked his comment to the team in the locker room that they showed in there about, you know, we've been so great at winning. Now is a chance for us to be great at losing.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, I think when you're constantly winning, you don't necessarily learn as much. Don't get me wrong, there's lessons in winning. I mean, obviously you're doing something right if you're winning. But I know for a fact that the teams that I've been on that have been able to achieve great success, at some point, you know, hit a bump in the road. Yeah. And I think not just basketball, I mean, these are like life lessons. And for college kids, in some ways they probably needed to feel that. You know, they were not living in reality. They were not living in reality. I don't care. I understand Stewie even won. She doesn't even know what reality is. She got a little bit of a taste in playoffs last year.
Did she win every game for her career?
No, she didn't win every game, but she ended with a trophy at the end of every season. That's not reality, you know, and no other UConn player experienced. I mean, every single player had at some point lost a very big game and had this, you know, obviously in college it's much more dramatic and traumatic. They make it that way. But, you know, everybody had something that they had to fight through, and now it's a chance for these kids to fight through that. And I think it's great that they get to experience it. They hate it, I'm sure. I would. But in the long run, they'll be thankful for it.
I like that this is one loss we're talking about.
I know. Hello, reality. Like, welcome. That's the funny part.
All right. Well, speaking about reality, let's talk about one of our favorite realities, food.
Food.
Okay, so there are a couple of things that we've been doing over the last couple of weeks, first of which is we've been talking about, just extensively every week, our top five favorite fast food items. I don't know how much fast food you eat, but I'm curious if you can come up with one. If you have five, that would be amazing.
Probably not as much as us.
Okay. I mean, okay. I grew up in America. I know fast food. I might not eat it now, but I have my preferences.
Do you have a top fast food item?
I mean, it's going to be somewhat cliche. I'm a huge French fry person, and I just don't think you can beat McDonald's French fries.
Really?
You can't. Especially in America. Like, I've played, you know, all over the world and whatnot, and I've had McDonald's pretty much every country I've been to. Kind of feels like home when you're over there. And they taste different over there.
Really?
So I'm going to go, like, in America, McDonald's French fries. I'm sure that has some sort of negative. I'm sure there's, like, something in the oil that is not good for you, but amongst other things.
How do they taste in other countries?
I think they're, like, cleaner or something. Like, fresher and cleaner. I don't know. But no matter what, it's like people talk about In-N-Out fries and, oh, they're real potato. Nah, okay. I don't care. McDonald's is way better to me.
Yes. I totally agree. I feel like McDonald's fries are probably my number one fry.
They're very strong.
Where do you stand on In-N-Out? Because for both of us, and we had a guest on who just talked, he's a basketball writer, but just talked fast food the entire time. And for all of us, the In-N-Out double-double animal style is our number one fast food item.
So you're talking to an East Coast girl.
Okay.
I've been to In-N-Out like twice in my life.
Okay.
Maybe three times, and one of which was literally 2 months ago because I was in Waco, Texas, which has every fast food chain you could possibly think of in like a mile radius. I was like, oh my God, it's unbelievable. Everything from like the names you know to then like the names you don't, you know, like the hole in the walls that are 100. Anyway, I was blown away by that.
They go deeper in Waco, Texas.
But okay. I was talking to a friend, and I've always heard how amazing In-N-Out was. And like I said, I've only had it like one or two other times prior. So I was like, all right, let me give this a go. So I don't really have like an I don't know what animal style means. I don't have like an extensive knowledge on my In-N-Out stuff. That fat burger, these are more like West Coast things, so I didn't grow up with it.
What is your preferred East Coast burger then?
Fast food?
Yeah. Or not fast food, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I
Yeah, I guess what do you miss most when you're on the West Coast?
Pizza. Yeah, pizza and bagels. Bagels for real. But this isn't fast food. Come on, let's get back to what we're talking about here.
Bagels could count as fast food.
Fast food?
I have a very liberal definition.
Bagels for sure. Pizza you can like kind of get by. There's some pizza places around here you can kind of get by.
It's just like the replacement level of pizza.
Yeah, it's not New York pizza. Yeah. Like not even close. But I mean, so burger-wise, I'm more of like a thinner. Like I love Dick's.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's another like probably cliche answer. It's like best burger in Seattle, Dick's. But it's like to me, thin burgers like that are the best, and they have that tartar sauce, which just sets it off. So like McDonald's burgers, even like I'm not going for the Big Mac.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going for like the cheeseburger.
That's basically your answer for the next question, which is what do you consider the best burger in Seattle?
Okay, so Dick's, if you're getting fast food, is what I would get over McDonald's or Burger King or whatever. I mean, I don't even know where Burger King is in Seattle.
Do you even know
where that is?
Can't even imagine.
There's one in Burien.
You have to go far south. Far south or far north.
All right, I have no idea. That's the one thing. I can barely name the McDonald's. But anyways, so yeah, it would be Dick's fast food-wise. But burger, like a good burger place, I like Red Mill. Red Mill's really good.
We just went there.
Yeah, Red Mill's good. I've actually not been to 8 Ounce Burger yet. I heard that. Is it 8 Ounce, right?
Yeah, 8 Ounce Burger Bar. We're doing weekly a different burger place every week in a search for Seattle's best burger, which will end with Dick's. And I feel like if we don't say Dick's is the best burger in Seattle, it'll be like, we'll be kicked out.
He might.
We're gonna have
deported.
To flip the bus.
But Red Mill, it was a thin patty.
Yeah, it's thin. That's where
I really like.
That's where I live.
Yeah.
I love the thin patties.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Like, I've been to Kid Valley. It's all right. What are some other ones? Throw some names at me. Why am I forgetting?
I can go through a list of what we've done so far.
I'm missing one that's like so obvious.
Is there some you might not have been to? Okay, so we have Dick's, Little Woody's. Have you been there?
No, I haven't been there.
That's our current leader.
Okay.
Katsu Burger.
Oh, no, I haven't been there either.
So that's like a deep fried, would you describe
Lord.
That katsu style? And the
okay.
burger is kind of the king for that one.
Okay.
So you might not be in on that. A place called Zippy's in White Center is our number one.
I'm not going to lie. I have like a 2 mile rule here. Yeah. If it's like without my 2 to 3 mile radius of Seattle, I'm...
There's Blue Moon Burgers, which we're going to talk about this week.
Oh, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So I've been to Blue Moon. Blue Moon's pretty good. Blue Moon's pretty good.
I thought it was a solid burger.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Have you been to Skillet in the Center House?
Yeah, I've not had the burger, though. Oh, I haven't been in the Seattle Center?
Yeah, there's
no, I haven't been to that one yet. Yeah, I've been to the Capitol Hill and the Ballard one. I've not done the burger. They do have an excellent breakfast sandwich, though. I think it's called, like, Chubby's or something. Little Chub. Or something. Yeah.
Wait, did you want to talk airplane food?
Oh, yeah, airplane food.
You brought it up.
Why? What's your go-to at SeaTac?
Beecher's.
It has to be Beecher's.
Yeah, okay.
No-brainer. When that opened, I was like, finally. It used to be, like, Qdoba. I could do, like, a burrito from there. Vino Volo actually has, like, low-key good food.
Really?
Yeah, the wine place, that little wine. Yeah, the food's really good.
Yeah, recall a video we did a few years ago of like Storm on the Road where Lauren is touting Vino Volo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it actually does. It's like, it's got like, but you need to sit down. It's not like grab and go.
Yeah.
If you have time to sit, it has pretty good food.
Yeah, Beecher's a game changer.
Absolutely.
It's a destination restaurant.
Without a doubt.
In the airport.
Yeah.
Worth buying a plane ticket just for. You can ask about the Chipotle question though.
So I was just going to see if you'd ever been to. I hear about these mythical airports that have Chipotles in them.
Uh-huh.
In particular, a place that has Chipotle breakfast burritos.
Oh, I don't know.
All right, well, you're going to have to keep a lookout.
Now keep my eye out. I'm trying to remember. I can't even think of a Chipotle in the airport.
Yeah.
It's rare.
A rare sight.
The ones that are in airports have to have the breakfast Chipotle.
Oh.
It's a life goal of mine. If I'm ever in Atlanta.
Oh, it's in Atlanta? Chipotle is? Oh, no, Chipotle is in Atlanta. You're right. No, it is. Absolutely. I don't know if
research.
Yeah, now I'll let you know if they have breakfast.
Okay.
No, you're right. They have a few of them.
Really?
Because Atlanta is like a humongous.
Yeah.
They have like tons of terminals. Or two. that counts.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sue.
Thank you, guys.
And the Storm will open the season May 13th in Los Angeles. Then opening night comes up the following night, Sunday, May 14th against Indiana. Get your tickets at storm.wnba.com. On that note, thanks for listening.
Thanks.